AFRS Sports Reel. This is the AFRS Sports Reel, another session of inside stuff from the world of sports, with three of your favorite sports commentators, Bill Brandt, Ed Thorgerson, and Sam Balter. Here, kicking off with an incident from the gridiron, is Sam Balter.
Football is a game not particularly distinguished for either true amateurism or for humor. And that's why it has always seemed to me that the football team which represents the Arkansas A&M College at Monticello, Arkansas, is one which can be classified as one for the book. In the season of 1941, for example, the slightly zany Ball Weevils of Monticello took another typical trip, a road trip to make all other gridiron excursions seem like a visit to the corner drugstore. The wandering Weevils, whose travels in unorthodox style have brought them lots of fun, no little renown, and precious few victories, were gone from the campus 32 days, traveled approximately 8,000 miles, and incidentally appeared in 6 games, and if memory serves me correctly, lost them all, although nobody kept particular account of such a minor detail. They were far prouder this time of their new uniforms, treating the opposition, which has often been surprised in the past by what the Weevils call their offense, to a display that could be produced only by lightning striking a rainbow. It seemed that the brand new jerseys not only were more colorful, but more economical. They were what is known to the trade as samples, and no two of them were of the same color or pattern. The coach of this team, Stuart Ferguson, a serious little Scotsman, became coach at Arkansas A&M with the understanding that he would not be paid a cent as such, that he wouldn't have to conduct organized practice, and that he would not be expected to win a game. The boys take care of the game strategy themselves, work out their own plays, and of course they come up with some marvelous flights of theoretical fancy, which on the gridiron turn out to be difficult to apply, but they try them anyway. Their first game on this particular trip was against Bradley Tech at Peoria, and the Arkies lost 67-0 and described the contest as one of their best games of the year. And so it went right through the excursion, against Moravian and Uppsala and all the rest. But the Arkies were happy, indulging themselves in their surprises, as they called them. Once, by some accident, no doubt, they got down to the opponent's 1-yard line. First down, goal to go. They called a quick kick and punted the ball over the end zone seats and out of the park. The opposition was surprised. The Arkies rolled on the turf in hilarity. Another time, they concocted a play wherein the quarterback received the ball from center, and the other 10 lads broke into an Indian war dance around him. It lost yards. So what? The Terpsichore was on the study curriculum. Against Davis and Elkins, the Arkies came up with a real dazzler, the multiple backward pass. This involved 16 backward passes from the opposition's 10-yard line until a safety had been scored. Again, the opposition was surprised. One other time, an Arkie halfback somehow broke free. Nobody between him and the goal except the official running alongside. On his way to the touchdown, the halfback handed the ball to the official with a pantomime that he was tired now, and here, you carry it the rest of the way. And so go the delightful and happy football warriors of the Arkansas Agricultural and Mining College of Monticello, a refreshing team of pure amateurs and fun makers in a sport noted particularly for its commercialism and its grimness. A team thus eminently qualified, I believe, is one for the book.
Thanks, Sam Balter, for that solid boot. And here's a story about a star baseball player, a third baseman whose rifle eye is as effective as his throwing arm. But let's let Ed Thorgerson tell it.
When old Father Time finally caught up with Pie Trainer and toppled him from his throne as King Hot Corner Guardian of the National League, a young fellow who was ready, willing, and able stepped right in. The new Mr. Third Baseman of the senior circuit became Stan Hack, Sacramento boy who went to the Chicago Cubs from his hometown team just 12 years ago. Like so many ball players, Stan's favorite off-season sport is hunting. And it's all the same to Hack whether the game wears fur or feathers. For 2 years, Stan owned a ranch in Oregon's Grand County, just a little south of the famous rodeo city of Pendleton. His shotgun knocked down hundreds of pheasants, quail, and Hungarian partridge in these parts, and his rifle brought him his full share of deer. And right now, even though he's got 5 months of baseball ahead of him, Stan is already planning to come out to Sacramento in the fall and get another crack at Sutter Basin Ducks. The last time I talked to him, he told me of a couple of adventures of his that I want to pass along, because I think you too might enjoy them. It seems that some years ago, Stan went hunting in northwest Montana near Augusta. It was just east of the High Rockies in Lewis County. The prize of the trip was a magnificent elk with a huge rack of horns. And naturally, Stan went to considerable trouble to have that great head mounted. But all was well until he returned to his home in Sacramento. And there, like the fellow who spends all winter building a boat in the basement and has to tear the house down to get it out, frontwards, backwards, sideways, stand, try them all. But that elk head just would not go through any door or window in the house. And so today, those antlers hang on the wall of the Sutter Lawn Tennis Club, which Mrs. Hack represented when she was one of our leading tennis stars. You tennis fans will probably remember her as Dorothy Weisel. Stan's second escapade came along right after the close of the baseball season in 1935. Along with Kaikai Kyler and Bob Smith and Mike McDermott, he went up to the Lake of the Woods country in Canada after deer and moose. He took along a brand new rifle, and he was just itching to try it out. Now, don't forget that new rifle. The comedy of errors really began when Stan was rattled by Mike. He watched Mike, a champion distance swimmer, break the ice in the lake and take a long, luxurious bath in the frigid water. And later, still shivering, Stan spotted a beauty of a duck. The cartridge jammed in the chamber. The buck bounded off, and Stan glumly walked back to camp. He willingly admitted that it was his own fault. Nothing wrong with that new automatic rifle, but the others gave him a terrific ribbing. Well, next day, Stan set out with their guide, determined to clean the slate. 2 hours out of camp, they broke into a little clearing, and there, facing them, stood a bull moose that looked as tall as a camel. Up came the new rifle, and again, a cartridge jammed. The guide bagged the moose and offered to credit Stan. But of course, that only made Brother Hack madder with himself and the fine new rifle. He survived a second dose of ribbing, and since then he's patched up the damage to his hunting reputation with his trusty old bolt action.
That was great, Ed Torgerson. And now coming at you with a little change of pace, but still in that old groove, is Bill Brandt with a yarn about a very versatile bird.
This is the story of one of the greatest athletes alive today. Samuel Dewey Byrd from Birmingham, Alabama. Here's why Sam is great. His name is in the front rank of two of our greatest professional sports, baseball and golf. Professional. That means a man gives his full time. It takes all his effort developing that skill. And the sky is the limit, how far he can go. And Byrd from Birmingham was a big league baseball player about 10 years. Then he goes for golf, full time. And he makes the top row on the links, the front rank of America's money shooters. And yet, this story has a solemn note. It's frustration. Always somebody in Sam Byrd's way, blocking that road to the peak, that last step. In baseball, Byrd has the biggest stumbling block you can imagine, the greatest slugger of all time, Babe Ruth. Today, in golf, playing from Plum Hollow, Birmingham, Michigan, near Detroit, Sam Byrd is up against Byron Nelson and Ben Hogan. In baseball, the wise old men said about Byrd, he would be the greatest ever if he'd only forget golf. In golf today, the wise men say, Byrd would be our greatest golfer of all time if he hadn't wasted all those years in baseball. And there you are. And 20 years ago, there was Byrd. Dewey Byrd, they call him down home in Birmingham, at the crossroads. What to do, baseball or golf? He can hit a ball a mile with a bat at home plate or with a driver on a golf tee. It's big money either way. Dewey Byrd has to work for a living, so he chooses both. Baseball in summer, golf in winter. And the golfers tell him, give up baseball, stick to golf. And every fall, Samuel Dewey Byrd decides to do that, give up baseball. But he hits 331 for Knoxville in 1927. He's bought by the New York Yankees. The Yanks farm him out to Albany, New York. He hits 371 in the Eastern League. How can you quit baseball hitting 371 and a chance with the Yanks coming up next spring? So on his 21st birthday, 1928, Byrd makes his big decision, baseball, the Yanks, the greatest team of all time, Murderers Row. And here comes Byrd, a 371 hitter, a sure shot to take over the load in that batting order soon as Babe Ruth gets tired. And his golf advisors moan. All these years in his early 20s when he ought to be sharpening up his golf, getting ready to tackle the Babe Ruths of the fairways. All those years, Sam Byrd's gone for the real Babe Ruth, the Bambino of SWAT. But Byrd is on the bench all summer. Sometimes he runs for Ruth. Sometimes he's a pinch hitter. Sometimes he plays a few games as a substitute. But whether it's baseball or golf, this is wasting time. A young man in either game ought to be in the game every day, growing up in action, under fire. That's what they tell Sam Byrd every winter in Birmingham. And here comes spring, and this might be the year. Take over that job from Babe Ruth. And now it's the spring of 1932, the training trip. The Yanks are heading home, exhibition games in the Midwest. Manager Joe McCarthy is worried. Earl Combs, his great center fielder from Owsley County, Kentucky, is under the weather. What to do? The answer, Byrd. So in Cincinnati, an exhibition against the Reds, it's Sam Byrd in center field leading off the Yankee batting order. Bam! Home run for Sammy Byrd. The Yanks move to Indianapolis, the Indians. Bam! That's two in 2 days. Now Columbus. Bam! Next stop, Brooklyn, Ebbets Field, the Dodgers. Bam! And Tuesday, the Yanks open the American League season in Philadelphia. Bam! And another bam! Two home runs on opening day. Yes, this is the shimmering pinnacle of Sam Bird's Yankee career. 6 home runs in 5 successive games. Way out ahead of Ruth and Gehrig and all the rest of the mighty Yanks. Sam Bird certainly made no mistake sticking to baseball. He's in there forever now. A new hero for the New York fans. The fairways are far away. Fans, I was there looking at all this, reporting all these games for the New York Times. All of us baseball writers felt that way about Bird. That's how we build our headlines. 6 homers in 5 games. If he keeps this up, it beats all the records. Singles and doubles, too, with the season 10 days old. Bird is leading the league, 367. The new spearhead of the Yankee batting order. The new star, brighter than Babe Ruth. But now comes a slump. All hitters get slumps. Cobb, Hornsby, even the Babe himself. It's just a temporary thing. You get over it. But here's the tragedy of Sam Bird. By this time, Earl Combs is feeling fine again. Manager McCarthy puts Combs in center field. It's his job. Babe Ruth is feeling good, too. The other outfielder is Ben Chapman. Ben's from Bird's hometown, Birmingham, Alabama. And Ben's burning up the baseline, stolen bases. Ben is hitting and fielding and throwing. You can't take Ben Chapman out of there. So Bird goes back to the bench again. His regular job for 3 years passed. And the wise old men say, this is what hurt Sam Bird in baseball. I got thinking of Sam Bird because tomorrow is the anniversary of Bird's final frustration. May the 23rd, 1936. Just 10 years ago. Now he's with the Cincinnati Reds. Still after that home run touch. But now nearly 30 years old. Not so easy to pick up that zip. The Reds are getting beat 3-0, the last of the ninth. Bill Swift from Scranton, Pennsylvania, is pitching for Pittsburgh. The fans begin to go home. But here comes a rally, a safe bunt, a single, a base on balls, 3 men on base. The Red rooters are roaring. And here comes a new Pirate pitcher, a relief pitcher, Cy Blanton, Pittsburgh's number one, the league-leading ace, a husky curve artist from Shawnee, Oklahoma. And here's the batter, Sam Bird. Now here comes the pitch, Blanton's first pitch. Bam! Yes, it's a Bird home run over that left field wall, that same wall that started Sam's great streak in 1932. One pitch, bam, and it's 4 runs. The game's over. Cincinnati 4, Pittsburgh 3. The hero, Sam Bird. The fans mob Sam Bird in a joyful tumult when he gets the home plate with a winning run. It's headlines all over the country. Sam Bird and his Merrywell home run. Does this start another streak? Let's look at the next day's headlines. May 24th, 1936. Tony Lazzari of the Yankees hits 3 home runs, 2 with the bases filled. Bird drove in 4 runs. Lazzari drives in 11. Sam Bird back again in the shadows, the shadow of the Yankees. In my book, Bird of Birmingham is one of the greatest athletes alive today. He climbed higher in baseball and golf than any other man ever achieved. I think he made the right decision back in 1928. But you always wonder what would have happened if he chose the other road. Golf, not baseball. It's always that way when you come to a crossroad of destiny. That decision you have to make once in a lifetime.
Thanks, Bill Brandt. And that winds up another AFRS sports reel. But we'll be beating a path to your door again soon with another reel of close-ups by America's best-known sports authorities. This is the Armed Forces Radio Service.